Hello, everybody. I'm Kevin Witham. Welcome to Season 4 of the Common Grounds Unity Podcast. Jesus prayed for unity so that the world may believe. Our mission is to connect and gather with Christians outside one's family of churches because we believe unity starts by building relationships. We say unity starts with a cup of coffee. So grab a cup and let's get started with another conversation.
Hello and welcome to episode 133 of the Common Grounds Unity Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about rhythm, rest, Sabbath, and sabbatical with our guest who has written a book that we will be discussing and really excited about that conversation. But first, let me introduce our co-host, Dr. Jeannie Shaw. She just defended her doctoral thesis back in October, so congratulations on that. Jeannie has had a long career serving in the ministry, has authored nearly 20 books. She's also been a guest on episodes 74, 75, and 115. So she is a friend of Common Grounds Unity. So please go back and listen to those podcast episodes and you'll learn more about her story. So welcome, Jeannie.
Thank you so much, Drew. And it's great to be here. I'm really looking forward to this episode to hear from Joel. Really fantastic about that. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Where are you recording from this morning?
I am from Glastonbury, Connecticut. So we've had much rain lately.
Yeah, it's kind of wet on the East Coast.
Yes, very, very wet on the East Coast. Yes. So,
well, Jeannie, I'll hand it to you to introduce our guest this morning, and then we'll keep moving.
Fantastic. I'm really happy to introduce Joel P. Dew. He served in various ministry roles before becoming a lead minister in Omaha, Nebraska. In 2006, the Peets, with three others, followed the Spirit's promptings to plant the Chippewa Valley Church in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And since then, the church has grown and was instrumental in planting a sister church in Duluth, Minnesota. And Joel holds a master's degree in biblical studies and has an ICF ACC coaching certification. His wife, Christy, is currently pursuing her master's degree in spiritual formation from Regent University, which that's what I did and where I went. So that's exciting to me. Joel and Christy have four children and are passionate about Airmost Ministry and see it as an opportunity to share with others the habits and rhythms of renewal that have shaped their family life and ministry. And we are so blessed to have him on this podcast today.
Awesome. So Joel, tell us a little bit about yourself. Share a little bit about your life and your journey and anything you think our listeners ought to know about you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's truly an honor to be here. And I appreciate Jeannie's gracious introduction. I heard one time with introductions that you kind of wish your parents were there to hear them, because your dad would be proud and your mom would actually believe everything they said. So
very true.
Anyways, it's great to be here. I've served 31 years or so in the ministry. But relevant to this conversation, I'm also the son of a minister. And so for about 51 years, I've been in and around ministry. And I like to say I have the front row seat at the joys and the pains of a ministry family. Married 27 years, three biological children who are all strong disciples. My daughter, just turned 18, so now I can say I have three adult children. but they're doing great. And then about 4 years ago, we took in our great niece into our home. And then 2 years ago, we adopted her. So we have three biological children and one adopted child. And she just came from, a really rough situation. And so right before the pandemic, we decided to take her in. So during the pandemic, we had three teenagers at home and adopted a fourth and cared for Christy's aging parents and led a church. So that was quite an interesting time.
Oh, great. You've had certainly a lot going on and oftentimes it seems out of the things that we are learning and struggling with, our ministries and our books are born. And in your book, A Sabbatical Map, Navigating Holistic Renewal for Ministers, you share some sobering statistics about minister burnout. And certainly, everybody goes through a lot. What you have just described, that's a lot of life to live.
Right.
But could you share a little bit more about this dilemma and why you wrote the book?
Sure. I think most of us have heard the statistics. 80% of seminary graduates will not be in the ministry after 10 years. Only a fraction make it a lifelong career. I believe that on average, a seminary trained minister lasts 5 years in the ministry. The interesting thing, a lot of these statistics were taken before the pandemic, and now there's research coming out about how these statistics have worsened by about a third. So if you take whatever percentage and you know, make it about a third worse, that's what's gone on from 2020 on in ministry lives and ministry families. So I'm the chair of a minister wellness committee in our fellowship, and we did our own survey, which had right before the pandemic, which had over 600 ministers responding to a survey, which is kind of a miracle in and of itself. But the demographic that was reporting the most burnout was actually our millennial ministers. And there is an interesting phenomenon that's happening with our younger ministers. And so I believe we're really facing an epidemic or a minister shortage. We have ministers who are retiring. We have Gen Xers. There's not a whole lot of Gen X ministers. And then our millennials are leaving the ministry a lot due to burnout. And then our Gen Zers are like, why would I do that? You know, and so we're really facing a minister shortage, and we're really desperate for ministers. I have a quote from Arianna Huffington that's from a secular book, actually, entitled Rest. But she says this: in creative and service industries where there's no factory whistle to signal the day's end, it's easy for workplace cultures to valorize long hours and normalize burnout. With a few notable exceptions, today's leaders treat stress and overwork as a badge of honor, brag about how little they slept and how few vacation days they take, and have their reputations as workaholics carefully tended by publicists and corporate PR firms. So it's really interesting how, of course, the ministry has no end of the day whistle. You know, the needs of the church in the ministry never end. And so good-hearted, soft-hearted, tender-hearted ministers, assuming they're that way, or they probably wouldn't have gone in the ministry, want to care for people, but it can just become overwhelming.
Yeah, so, you know, broadly speaking, we see this burnout taking place. We see the trends of more ministers right now wanting to quit, seriously thinking about, you know, getting out of ministry more than ever before, fewer going in, those who are going to seminary. But you went through a very trying time a few years ago. You mentioned that you have several kids, you adopted some, and then your in-laws taking care of them, and caring for a church during the pandemic. Very, you know, that's a recipe for burnout right there. So tell us about how you found or discovered the need for Sabbath and how you were able to embrace that and live into that.
Well, it actually starts long before that. My dad, like I mentioned, was a bivocational minister, and he, both my mom and dad graduated from Wheaton College and went in the ministry. But after about 25 years of marriage and in the ministry, he burnt out. And I was the youngest. I was the youngest of four. I was the only one at home. And I just had a firsthand view of how burnout cost him his faith, cost him his marriage. They ended up divorced after 29 years of marriage, cost him his mental health. and it all led to a church split. And so it was a tragedy. So I had the front row seat of going from this incredible family, great church experience to I felt like I lost my dad, I lost my family, I lost my church family. This church split was devastating. And so that that created some deep wounds. And someone had said, from our deepest wounds come our greatest passions. And so I got more involved in the church in college and went into the ministry very young. And in the first 2 years, had a no better than my father's moment. I also burnt out, and it was scary. It was like, burnout is not just you're tired. Like you can't, it's in the body. It's in the mind. You can barely read your Bible. You can't, you desperately need rest, but you can't rest. You're just completely depleted. And I came out of the ministry and had some time to recover. And then in 1995, went back into the ministry and was just determined to do it differently. So in the 90s, in our fellowship, it was not the time to rest. It was very intense. But by God's grace, I married Christy in 1996, and she had a different, she's very structured, very ordered, and immediately my life got more into a rhythm. And so that saved my soul, I think. And then in 2003, our fellowship went through kind of a reformation, and I started thinking more about what had gotten to us to this point, and discovered this little book called Emotionally Healthy Church by Peter Scazzaro. And it just opened my world to this idea of Sabbath and solitude. And I started practicing those things at that time. And that just changed our family, changed my soul, changed my faith. It was just incredible breath of fresh air. But then in about 2014 or so, I talk about this in the book, this idea of sabbatical came out when I was in grad school at the Harding School of Theology. And I had only thought of sabbatical as kind of a punitive thing for a minister that was about to get fired or should be fired. Or it was kind of like one last ditch effort to help them get them fixed so they could, you know, do ministry. And my professors were just kind of laughed out loud, like that's not what a sabbatical is at all. And they just introduced me again to this idea of renewal and restoration of the body, mind, soul, and heart. And from that point on, started discussing it with our church and people who were mentoring me at that time, and they were open to the idea. And so 2016, we took our first sabbatical, and that was so transformative. It's like I can't keep it to myself. Like, it's so good. It's so rich. It isn't just about burnout. It's not just an antidote to burnout, though that is a significant issue. It's really a call into the wilderness. It's a call into the desert, the Eremos, the quiet place, I believe, by God, because of his desire for deep intimacy with us. So it's not just a burnout antidote. It is a spiritual wilderness experience that if we can rhythmically and intentionally enter in those, then that can help us thrive in the ministry and not just survive the ministry. So that's what I've experienced. And then once I came back from that, I just started beating the drum, like every chance I got to speak or whatever. And slowly more and more people started to experience this, and the momentum just started to really build. And then, we had, kids became teenagers. We adopted this child, and both Christy's parents, you know, passed away. And so 6 years after our first one, it was time for our second one. And we hopped on that. But this time we knew more. I'm going to say we knew what we were doing, but we definitely knew more of what we were doing and how to structure the time and how to include the family. And it was just a beautiful time of renewal again. So yeah, that's a little bit of why this has been so meaningful, because I experienced in my family of origin, I experienced myself, and I experienced then the blessing of functioning in the ministry differently for our own marriage, for our own family, and then our church family has adopted these rhythms as well. And it's just been a blessing to the whole congregation.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for sharing that and your own personal story. And certainly all of us listening have something that we can relate to and take away with that. I know the generation I was born in, I so related to what you said about the badge of honor.
Right.
It was like, I remember as a woman having a child, it was like my baby was born on Wednesday. You know, I probably couldn't make it to church Wednesday night, but I sure better be there Sunday.
Right.
And, right. You know, just, but I didn't think anything of it. And that was just the way we did life, a badge of honor. And there, you know, certainly a work ethic is an important thing, but right. at the same time, so much can be on our own and to earn something or to build something or to try to please God that really deals with our theology.
Right.
And that's the question I want to ask you now, because you're talking about minister burnout, but you also mentioned your congregation really had to learn this as well. And so it seems like this is rather deeply rooted in our theology. Of course, we see God himself had a day of rest, and then calls us to keep the Sabbath, or called the Israelites to keep the Sabbath holy. And yet, you know, is that just something for people who were walking in the Old Covenant to experience? What value do you think we would find in reexamining our theology regarding rest, rhythms, Sabbath, and seasons?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And it's so rich and so many layers to it. I do want to say one thing quickly before I get into that. You mentioned work ethic, and there is a strong feeling, tends to be, of older generations around the work ethic of younger generations. And sometimes Sabbath can be viewed as the soft thing. And what I would just real quickly say to that is you can't talk about a rhythm of rest without talking about hard work. Sabbath isn't resting 6 days and working one day. It's working hard for 6 days and then ceasing, Shabbat, which means to cease. Ceasing the business and busyness and receiving this gift from God. And so it's not a soft thing. Actually, it reinforces work ethic. But it humbles us that we are not what we do or what we produce. There's a governor, so to speak, on our pace, and it creates a space to be reminded who God is, who we are, and who we are as a community and how we relate. So yes, our theology is a big deal. Father Ron Rollheiser actually talked about our theology. Sabbath is a cross-section of our theology and our anthropology and our spirituality. So our theology is, who is this God who rested? The God of creation was the only God of all the gods who would actually rest. So this was very unique. And so then Yahweh redeems Israel out of Egypt, and Pharaoh says, I don't know this God. And Pharaoh was viewed as a God who valued the people for their productivity, right? And it was never ending. It was harsh. And so you have this pharaonic worldview that values a human for not who they are, but what they produce, what they bring to the table, so to speak. And in that worldview, we as humans can feel never enough, right? And they weren't ever enough for Pharaoh, because his center was not at peace. His center was full of anxiety. And so Yahweh is like, no, I'm different. I bring you out, and sure, I give you work to do, but then I give you a time to cease work and enjoy and delight in God and even in the work, etc. So there's so much anthropology, or the study of humanity, that our theology, who is this God who rested, who Shabbat, who ceased and gave Nuach, and then who is this God, who is this human, and then our spirituality, which brings God and man together. So it's a day when God rested. Genesis 2, it says he blessed the day and he sanctified it or declared it holy. And so the idea of blessing is to fill with life. So he blessed the fish of the sea and the humans, and they had life. They were fruitful, multiplied, and filled the earth. And then he blessed the humans, and then he blessed this space and time. So it's very interesting to think about a space and time being filled with life. But Jesus brought that to life, as so much healing and restoration happens deliberately on the Sabbath. And so, and then this, when he declared it holy, what does that mean? I think one thing that it means can be that, for example, the temple was built, but it wasn't holy until the presence of God filled it, right? So something is holy when the presence of God is in it and fills it. And so the space and time God declared holy. So there's this space and time filled with life and the presence of God. And I come at this not as an academic, actually, but as a practitioner. So I started practicing Sabbath having no idea what actually was going on theologically or in my humanity or in my spirituality. I just started practicing it, and it was just so good, and it was so life-giving that I was like, man, I think I need to study this out a little bit more, and started reading books, and gradually kind of the lights came on. But it wasn't like, oh, I should do this biblically, let me taste it. It was like, I'm tasting this feast. I've got to figure out what's happening here. So, yeah, I think, you know, there's an idea of like, well, this is just Old Testament. One idea that this brings to mind, even when we think about the law, is in Psalm 19, the law is described as something that restores our soul, makes wise the simple, rejoices the heart, enlightens the eyes, and brings great reward. So we tend to think of the law with this negative legalistic lens, but I don't think that's very fair to the law. Now, human religion over time has made it that way, right? And Jesus came to fulfill the law, but even Jesus was like, I didn't come to nullify the law, but to fulfill it. And you think of even the Ten Commandments, I've heard them called the Ten Freedom Preservers, because the intro to the Ten Commandments was God, Yahweh, bringing the Israelites out of slavery and out of bondage, and then giving them this freedom. It's like, these are ways to preserve your freedom. And if you think about, one way to think about the Ten Commandments is, are they, or a question around them is, are they prescriptive or descriptive? In other words, think of the law of gravity for a second. So the law of gravity was discovered, right, in 1687 by Sir Isaac Newton, right? He discovered the law of gravity. But the question is, did gravity exist before the law of gravity existed? Were the humans obeying the law of gravity before Newton said, hey, here's actually what's going on? Of course, all of us are obeying the law of gravity. So in essence, I believe this idea of Sabbath, it's not a Mosaic law, did not originate in the Mosaic law. it's a God thing. It's not a law thing. And so therefore, since God is immutable, is it relevant today? Well, if God is real today, and if we're human today, and if the Holy Spirit exists today, then I think that the Sabbath creates a space for us to be reminded. It's like a big reset button. And so these habits actually build on each other: Sabbath, solitude, sabbaticals, the seasons. So in Genesis, we see the daily rhythm. And then we see on day 4, the moon, the sun, they talk about seasonal rhythms. And day 7, you have the weekly rhythm. And then God expands these in the Mosaic law to the seasonal festivals, the celebrations where they were to cease from work and have deeply spiritually rich and meaningful times of celebration. And this gave the whole family, the kids, an opportunity to really experience God and experience their faith, not just be taught about their faith from the pulpit, so to speak. And then every 7 years, the land was to lie fallow. And if you think about an agrarian society that is completely dependent on the crops coming that year, for them to take a whole year and not plant, not sow, not water, not harvest, what did that force them to do? It forced them to rely not on themselves, but on God. And then every 49 years, the year of Jubilee, right? So even the idea of Jubilee is hints at what a Sabbath day is designed to be. It's a Jubilee, it's a celebration. And so that was the seventh year they were to let the land lie fallow, and then the year of Jubilee. So in essence, there's 3 years of provision that God provides without the Israelites lifting a finger. And what did that do to their faith? It's just beautiful, right? So I believe faith is I love teaching and we need teaching, but it's as much caught as it is taught. And so Sabbath creates a rhythm of experiencing God. Solitude, seasonal, every 7 years, a sabbatical, every 49 years, etc. So I don't believe the new covenant, in the new covenant, are we under the law? Absolutely not. But I believe it's an even richer experience because of Jesus and because of the Spirit. And so when I teach about this, I don't present it as a law to be obeyed as much as it is an invitation from Jesus. Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. The Sabbath was made for man. So Jesus literally says, the Sabbath was made by whom? It was made by God for humanity, for our humanness. And so it reminds us who God is, who I am, the difference. I'm not God, so I can let go into God's hands. There's a great release into God's hands. And then who we are as a community when a community is built around it. Not a community where everyone has to obey the Sabbath on a certain day, like a Seventh-day Adventist type community, but more as a community, we function with this idea of rhythm and pace.
Yeah.
So.
And there's so much richness that you touched on. Some of the things that stood out to me were, you know, the focus on making space or naming space for God to fill, that it's holy because God fills that space, and the celebration aspect that, you know, there have been times in Christian history where the Sabbath was meant to be very somber, very, you know, you can't laugh on the Sabbath, you know, because it's right. Holy and in a kind of, you know, very strict ritualistic holiness. But the way you're describing right. this, it's beautiful. Like Psalm 19, there's a beautiful view of God's law, that there's a gift here. Psalm 119, the longest poem in the Bible, is all about the law and being able to meditate on that. And Sabbath is a gift. Sabbath is a gift that God gives us so that we can rest and that we can celebrate the fact that he is in this space, and there's life that is being poured out. So what a beautiful thing. I feel like most ministers love this as a principle or as an idea.
Right.
But it's tricky to sell this sometimes to elders and people who are coming from the corporate world where they are not familiar with this. Right. It's not widely accepted. It's getting to be more so. I think you point that out in the book. But how would you recommend navigating this space of having this discussion with elders, deacons, other church leaders who are unfamiliar with this, and you're trying to advocate for yourself or your other ministry staff and say, this is important? You know, what are some pointers that you might give to some of our listeners who love this principle, love this idea, but are kind of daunted about broaching this topic with their elders?
It's super vulnerable to have this conversation. We it's that badge of honor, work ethic. We are, if you're in the ministry for very long at all, you're extremely self-motivated, you're driven, you're passionate. And so it's very vulnerable to have this conversation. So in the book, I list a number of conversation starters to just get the conversation going. But one of the things, so we call it, it's like a number of different entry points. One of the things that is an entry point in the conversation is this idea that now almost 25% of Fortune 500 companies in the world have sabbatical policies for their executives. In other words, Microsoft, Google, you know, all kinds of companies and some are even mandating sabbaticals. So in other words, at Microsoft, you will take a sabbatical. It's in the job description. And if you were to even sign in on your work email while you're on sabbatical, they will fine you. not just fine you, they will fine you financially. That's how serious they are. And the reason is because the wisdom of God is producing, in a business world, it's about the bottom line. But the bottom line is not only not being hurt, it's being bolstered. The productivity is increasing. The retention rate is increasing. Think of the cost of the turnover. And again, we're talking secular world. All the time and energy spent in training, developing leaders. Companies will spend thousands of dollars in seminars and in meetings to train leaders, right? To work together. Why would they not spend a few thousand dollars into their executives to continue to develop them, to have them come back refreshed, and to keep retention? So it's just the wisdom, they're seeing the wisdom of it, and the wisdom of the world should not be surpassing the wisdom of God put into practice in the church, right? The world should be leading the church, but oftentimes, unfortunately, the church has to wait for the world to get it than to be like, oh, maybe we should think about this. And so one of the entry points is the number of sabbaticals in the secular world that is increasing. So when someone says, well, I'm stressed at my job, I don't get a sabbatical, why should my minister? That's actually an important question to answer. Most of the time it doesn't come from a cynical heart. It comes from, hey, this is my experience. Like, I'm stressed too. And so I try to really honor that question. I think one of the ways is like, well, you can actually petition for a sabbatical at your own workplace. And there's a whole book that's actually right here. It's called Power Sabbatical. This is a secular book written to people in the secular world about how to advocate for a sabbatical, for yourself with your current employer. So just because you haven't had one yet doesn't mean that you may not be getting one. Though even if it's not possible in the church, this blessing can spread through teachings on Sabbath, as well as lay leadership sabbaticals, rhythms around serving and taking a break from serving. A church I'm working with right now, we're on a two-year project with this church to help the minister, the staff, the core group, all the lay leaders, all the small group leaders, and then all the members experience this sacred blessing of rhythm. And kind of whatever, we have people not in the ministry who have been leading groups for decades and have never gotten a break. They need a break. They need a time to cease and just be a Christian, just come to church. And so we're really working at all different kinds of leadership or membership levels to help people experience this. One of the unique things, I think most jobs have stress with them, but I use the idea of being a pilot as an example. I just flew into Chicago 2 days ago, and that was honestly the most afraid I've ever been in flying. Like, we flew in, it was like 40-mile-an-hour winds, and that was like a roller coaster ride. But as I was sitting there, I thought about all of these lives are in this pilot's hands. Like, what kind of stress does that carry? What kind of emotional fatigue? What kind of alertness? What kind of intensity does he have to be ready for? And the FAA literally has rules. I don't know if most people know a little bit about this because we've had a flight delayed because the pilots didn't get their rest in or whatever. But a pilot cannot fly more than 32 hours during any, this is straight from the FAA website. No pilot may fly more than 32 hours during any 7 consecutive days. Each pilot must be relieved from all duty for at least 24 consecutive hours at least once during any 7 consecutive days. And I just thought it's ironic why the 7-day pattern and the 24 hours, like, that's interesting. But they have 7-day rules. They have X number of hours per month, X number of hours per year, the number of hours they need between flights, et cetera, et cetera. So there's all kinds of rules because there's an acknowledgement that that role does have unique stress and demands on it. Okay. Likewise, a minister, there is unique stresses in the life of, in the family of a minister that creates conditions ripe for potential burnout. There's a reason these statistics are so high. one analogy I like to use is most people have like a 5-legged stool to carry the load of their life. Okay. So if you think of this heavy load on a stool, you got 5 legs to support that. You have your faith, you have your church, you have your family, you have your friends, and you have your career. So if your friendships are going bad, well, you have your faith and you have your career. That, you know, if your career is going bad, you leave it at your career and you come home to your family and you go to church and you hang out with your friends, right? If your faith is struggling, well, I got my family and I can go to work to stop thinking about my, you know. So, but in the ministry, all of these supports are all wrapped into one. And so there is a unique and intense kind of twisting and pressure on this one-legged stool to carry, because your career, your faith, your friends, your family, your church are all wrapped up into one very, at times, complicated dynamic. And so therefore, because that's unique, you have a unique system to support that. So what a sabbatical does is like it brings up under that load and it relieves that pressure on that one-legged stool. And so once the pressure is relieved, God, the Spirit can take you places into deep healing, rejoicing, celebrating, rest, etc. That when you're carrying that load, it's very, very difficult to figure out how to do that. So that's one of the ways we explain, well, I don't even get a sabbatical, why should I minister? It's like, well, number one, we would want you to have a sabbatical too. And many companies are doing that in the secular world. Number two, we want the whole church to have this blessing of Sabbath and solitude and rhythm. Number three, there are unique challenges to being in the full-time ministry that the sabbatical helps minister to them. It helps shepherd them. And as a church, we want the minister to shepherd us, but we have to shepherd. The minister is just a member of the church as well, and we have to shepherd them and understand what they're going through, etc. Another idea, and then I'll stop talking, is this: the new research that's happening around secondary trauma secondary trauma and compassion distress or compassion fatigue. And so there's so much we're learning. Psychologists, sociologists, any kind of caregiving profession. It's not just ministers that are burning out. Social workers are burning out. Therapists are burning out. Teachers are burning out. Like any kind of profession where you're engaged in people's lives and walking with them through very traumatic events, secondary trauma is you start to internalize that yourself. And for me, I'm highly sensitive and empath. And so if Jeannie right now starts to express something that she's feeling, I can't not feel those things with her. And if I face that day after day in the most intense situations of a congregation's life, that takes a toll on me. So there's so much we're learning in all of these professions. And this is why another reason why sabbatical and rhythmic rest is becoming more and more more and more common.
Yeah. Yes, that's it. That runs deep in so many ways. And whether a person's in the ministry or not in the ministry, the theology you talked about, the need for rest for our souls, is just so crucial. Right. Another thing you mentioned is just there can be that tendency to just feel like, but if I do this, if I take this time off, what's going to happen? You know, I'll be letting people down. I'll be letting God down, which really kind of goes back to the self-reliance rather than God is enough. The Spirit is enough. He is our wonderful counselor, our everlasting Father, our Prince of Peace. He can do it. And along those lines, it takes some spiritual, emotional, mental preparation, I think, for a minister or really anybody who's going to go through a sabbatical, who's going to be able to experience that, to prepare themselves, and for the minister to prepare the congregation. Now, again, I think the challenge can be, I want to do this. I have a checklist to get all these things right, to do it just right. Mm-hmm. And yet making that space, solitude, is really hard when this has not been the norm of how we've lived life. So what are some thoughts you could offer about how a person can prepare themselves and their congregation for sabbatical?
Well, preparation is huge. I mean, the Jews had a whole day they called Preparation Day. And matter of fact, they were so intense about Preparation Day that they needed to get Jesus off the cross. Wouldn't take him down during the Sabbath day. And so preparation is a big, big deal. I would say preparing a congregation for a ministerial sabbatical, it's the largest section of my book, preparing the congregation and preparing the minister. The biggest thing I would say with the congregation is to not rush the process. I've had people announce a sabbatical and then 2 weeks later they're gone. And it just leaves the congregation in this, what just happened? And why is it so quick? Like, what's really going on? And so the biggest thing about preparation is to work with the board of directors, work with the elders to develop a sabbatical policy. Maybe the first time all the ins and outs of the policy don't need to be established, but there's a working toward that direction where this isn't a personal crisis response. This is a proactive thing that is in our policy and procedures manual. So working with a number of groups, spending a year to a year and a half of preparation. Again, if you're, you know, if it's just 9 months or 6 months, that's better, you know, as much preparation as possible. I think preparing, obviously, who's going to handle things when people are gone. Once you reassure that this is a proactive thing and this is not a crisis, once most members hear, like, hey, our minister's okay and he's coming back, they're like, okay, well, who's going to preach then? Like, they're like, oh, that's great for them. Good. They probably are tired and need it. So who's preaching? You know, where do I go if I have a marriage crisis or whatever? So being very thorough with the responsibilities that are delegated and the authority, who's really the authority for these various things. So preparing the congregation, bringing in outside help has really helped calm a lot of things in the congregation. This is something many churches are doing. There's people who have been doing this a long time and teaching and training it. That's been very, very helpful. And just talking about the blessing to the entire congregation. This isn't just a minister thing. This is going to bless the whole organization. I think for yourself, really working with your spouse, understanding whether they're paid or not paid. Your spouse, you're both in this thing. the idea of a non, you know, maybe they're not paid by the church, but they are in the ministry. And so really listening to each other about what their desires, what their dreams would be for this time, how they connect with God, dreams for a family. Like one women's minister was just in tears the other day talking about what she wanted to do with the family. and how family vacations for their whole life has been from Sunday afternoon till Saturday. And a lot of those are filled with the husband planning his sermon, you know? So the freedom to dream, to travel, to have family experiences were really, really big. And it just moved her deeply because the whole family does pay a price, and they're willing to pay the price. They're eager to pay the price. But to have that given voice to, and then to have acknowledgement of that and a plan to minister to that, really is deeply, deeply moving. So I think working with your family, dreaming big and not selling the time short is really, I mean, I've seen resources come out of amazing places. I worked with a minister the other day who, this person gave them a 3-month all expenses paid trip to Europe. It was about $25,000 that they provided for this family to go. And that was just out of the blues. I've seen God provide resources to form this mountaintop experience that are just miraculous, just amazing signs of God's provision. And so don't sell the time short, dream big. But then also you have this balance of tempering expectations. So it's like, this is a once in a lifetime thing. We got to make the most of it. And there's just this huge amount of pressure on the time. And it's like, okay, this is actually once every 7 years. You'll do it again and have enough margin where your sabbatical doesn't, you're not just running around like crazy to get all these great things accomplished. So there's a real thorough plan about what percentages to use with your time between CCing and recreating and solitude retreats, having fun, having marriage time, having family time, etc. But then having said all that, be sure to temper the expectations that this isn't a one-time end-all, we'll fix everything. This is a, you know, this is a break, three a month-ish or so time where you can cease and celebrate God. So those are some of the keys. One of the things I would just plead with people is to get coaching.
Yeah, thanks so much. That's really, really helpful. As we kind of begin to wrap up our conversation together, one, that's just so much material. Anybody listening to this, I really encourage you to read the book. It can tell you so much more about Sabbath and sabbatical and how to have that conversation with the churches and how to help churches embrace this. But tell us a little more about sabbatical coaching, your ministry with Eremos Ministry. What can people expect? What are some of the practical things if our listeners are wanting to explore having a sabbatical coach? What does that look like? What are the costs involved and time involved, structure? Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, we first thing we do is an assessment where every situation is different. We assess where the church is at, where the minister is at, where their family is at. And then we craft a specific proposal based on that assessment. Where are you at mentally, emotionally? Some people are in crisis burnout mode. Some people are like, we're doing fine, but we need to do this. So based on that assessment, our team sends back a proposal. And I have on the team, we have elders, teachers, therapists, we have Enneagram coaches, we have all kinds of specialists then that I connect with and channel. So Eremos is kind of like we collect the information. my wife and I do obviously coach, but we can also channel people to appropriate resources. I have one guy who has researched all the free places ministers can go to all over the country. And there's an amazing amount of resources for this purpose. And so he has, you know, each state, all the places, the different ministries you can apply for grants and that sort of thing. And so there's just Eremos is kind of a hub of coaching, consulting. We work with boards, we work with elderships. We can work with congregations to help them understand the need for this. So we're doing a 3-month, Dr. Sean St. Jean and I are going to the UK. By the time this airs, we'll be back, but a 3-month minister wellness project with the ministers in the United Kingdom. Like I said, I'm doing a 2-year contract with one church, working with the whole church. So it's kind of whatever that assessment, whatever you communicate, you need and want where you're at, we tailor a program to meet that. I would just, the biggest thing, like I said, is just get coaching and really try to receive coaching from someone who's taken a sabbatical. I'm certified as a leadership coach, and that's great. But someone who hasn't taken a sabbatical themselves, there's things that go on in a sabbatical that you learn that you wouldn't just not learn through reading a book or something like right. that. So I would encourage that. As far as cost, there's a depending again, if it's coaching just myself or it's my wife and I coaching, or if it's a consultation, there's an hourly rate, but I don't even probably want to say that because it varies so much based on the need and all what's going to go on as far as teaching, preaching, consulting, coaching, what levels are being coached, et cetera, et cetera. So the other thing I do want to mention is I have a 3-part series. The Sabbatical Map was the first book in what I'm calling the Eremos Way series. The next book that I'm about 3/4 done with right now is on Sabbath. So the Sabbatical Map is for ministers. The Sabbath Map is for Christians. And then the book, hopefully done by the end of the year, is called the Solitude Map, and that's for leaders. So the combination, actually, of Sabbath, solitude, and sabbatical, I have experienced forms this deep well of the spirit of life, of blessing, and of sanctification, of God, of so many good blessings. But the combination of those rhythms helps the sabbatical not just be a once every 7-year experience. They all flow together to create this wellspring of living water that I think has been a beautiful thing. The last thing I would say about Eremos is we have raised thousands of dollars from people who want to support people going on ministerial sabbaticals or even Christians going on solitude retreats. So we have a scholarship fund where if you're getting coaching, then you can apply for a scholarship, and we've been able to give thousands of dollars because this is costly and our churches are new to this idea. And so many, many churches are supporting their ministers. But when it comes to the finances, it's like, so we can come alongside and really help the minister or the Christian have a mountaintop experience. So if they're being coached, they can apply for that scholarship, and that can really go a long way toward providing a great experience for the Christian in solitude or sabbatical.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Joel. This has been a great conversation. Love to explore more with that, but our time is wrapping up. But before we get off with you, we want to do something we call the lightning round, where we ask a couple of lighthearted questions that may tell us more about you and your personality than some of the other things we talk about. So Jeannie, you want to kick us off on this lightning round?
Sure. So Joel, do you have a favorite beverage?
Coffee, of course.
Of course.
Amen.
But you got to have almond cream and it's got to be dark roast.
There you go.
Maybe even straight espresso if I'm in Europe.
Now, is that the Almond Joy creamer? That stuff is amazing, but we gave that up a long time ago because we wanted our coffee to be somewhat healthy. If you could pick any classic car, what would it be?
You know, I'm gotta confess, I'm not a big classic car guy, though. One of my big brothers did have an IROC Z Camaro. It was 70 something, and he let me drive that thing, and it was a little dangerous. So,
yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. So what subject in school did you like the least?
I mean, not like grad school or like any school,
any school.
Okay. Subjects in school I liked the least was probably, probably the my art, some kind of art. Like I have an engineering mind, and so art was just painful. Sorry to the artist. I love art. It's beautiful. I just can't do it.
No, just don't want to do it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, what advice would you give to your younger self? Other than take a Sabbath.
Yeah. Don't burn out. I would say the advice I would give was what my therapist gave me very strongly. He said, quit taking everything personally. So,
good advice.
Don't take things personally. It's not personal. It's not about you.
All right. Well, thank you so much. As we close out, I want to remind people about Eremos Ministry. And you can buy Joel's book there on his website, www. And let me spell that out because not everybody speaks Greek fluently. Eremos is E-R-E-M-O-S. ministry.org. So www.eremosministry.org. Also, I want to make you aware, my co-host Jeannie Shaw has a new book out. Love for you to check that out. It's called Reexamining Our Lenses, The Relationship Between Restoration Movement Hermeneutics and Spiritual Formation. I know that will be a blessing to you. Here at Common Grounds Unity, we have a vision to create and support gatherings of unity-minded Christians around the globe. We want to see the good news of these gatherings modeling the prayer of Jesus in our divided world. So please help us out by subscribing and posting comments about this podcast on our Facebook page. And the link is in our show notes. If you're benefiting from this ministry, then we ask you to consider making a monthly donation to support the work that we're doing. You can find that at www.commongroundsunity.org/donate. Thanks so much for joining us and have a blessed week.
Thank you for listening to the Common Grounds Unity podcast. Please check out commongroundsunity.org to learn about who we are and to find gatherings in your area. You can also subscribe to our monthly digital newsletter, join the Facebook group, or find our YouTube channel. If you benefit from this ministry, please consider a monthly donation by going to www.commongroundsunity.org/donate. Until next time, God bless, and remember, unity starts with a cup of coffee.